Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. As you know, I am Rachel Galvin, and I interview people in the film industry on this show. If you haven't listened to any of my archives, you can do that at any time to see who I've interviewed in the past. Well, today, I'm interviewing Jeff Freeman, director of Island of the Cannibal Death Gods. I think I have him on the line. Jeff, are
you
there?
Yes, I do.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
How are you?
How you been?
Good.
Good.
I'm going to dive right in. You ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay.
Hit me with it.
So I saw your movie last night, and
okay.
I loved it. And
thank you.
Let's start first, before I get into kind of some of the details. Let's talk about what inspired you to make this B-movie. And, you know, I know you were inspired by Lloyd Kaufman and Roger Corman and William Griffey and people like that. Tell me about your experience of their movies and what inspired you to do this.
Well, what was happening was, I've been in film a long time ago, mostly just acting and extra work and things. And so I went to film school at FAU and got the bug to actually, you know, work on the other side of the camera. And what I wanted to do for my first film is, you know, I thought about a couple of ideas I had. And what really struck me the most was when I was a kid, and I've always been a big fan of fantasy and horror and sci-fi and so forth. It's probably my preferred genre in filmmaking. And what really inspired me was I was a kid down here in South Florida. I grew up down here. I'm a native. Is they had a show on every Saturday morning and again Saturday night called Creature Features. And this is basically you get two movies in the morning, and you get one late at night at 11 o'clock. And it was a show basically that just showcased all of these different genres of horror films. I mean, you get all the Japanese monster movies with the guy in the rubber monster suit trashing little models of Tokyo. And then you'd also get all the old Universal horror movies from the 30s and 40s, you know, Frankenstein and the Wolfman and Dracula, you know, with Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff and Lon Chaney Jr. And then besides that, you would just get the slew of bad, low-budget B-horror films from all over the world, Italy and, you know, England and the United States and Germany, and just, you know, bad dubbing, and the lighting is poor and the acting is, like, overly over-the-top dramatic, and, you know, with, you know, just like this heavy, heavy dialogue and discussions. And you know, that's what I grew up on. So I said, you know, these guys had such a huge impact on me. You know, when I grew older and found out who people like Lloyd Kaufman and Herschel Gordon Lewis and Beau Griffey and Roger Corman were, and, you know, then, of course, you know, all the directors used to work for AFI back in the day, what's the name of that company that had the Winchester logo? I can't remember the name of the company now. But when I got older and found out who they were, I just said, you know what, this is the film I want to make. I want to make a film that reminds me of those B-horror movies that I watched as a kid and couldn't get enough of when I was growing up.
Uh-huh. And you're promoting
that's
it in an interesting
it.
Way, too. You're promoting it like, tell me about the 3D glasses and the little promotional kit.
Well, you know, back then in the day, to get people interested in watching those kind of movies, that they would do is you would have, you know, like what became big in the 50s and early 60s was surround sound and sense surround, you know, where the sound was so loud and vibrant that you get the vibrating chairs and everything. And then...
Mm-hmm.
You had people doing 3D, and, you know, so you'd have all the 3D things, like they actually did, it came from outer space, was actually shot in 3D at one point, which starred one of the original cast members of Gilligan's Island, the guy that played the professor. He was in that film in the 50s, so they shot that in 3D, so you could put on your colored 3D glasses and watch, you know, the alien monsters come at you. And and then Roger Corman came out in the 60s with Smell-O-Vision, which was scratch and sniff, where you actually got a scratch and sniff card, and, you know, at a point in the movie, you would flash like a color on the screen or something, and you'd scratch, and you'd actually get, you know, supposedly what they were trying to get you to do. So I said, you know, these were such great ideas back then. They were so cheesy and just, just so made to entertain it. So I just said, I have to do that. So I included a scratch and sniff card with the DVD. So if you buy the DVD, not only do you get the DVD extras and everything, the director's commentary in the movie and stuff like that, but you get a scratch and sniff card. So in one version of the movie that I call the grindhouse version, where I even cheese up the special effects even more, you can actually, you know, a number will flash on the screen, you can scratch the number and get that smell. And then I said, the other thing was when I was in production with Island, and just afterwards, when I finished all the final edits, 3D became the big thing again in Hollywood. That started like, what, in 2009, 2010,
yeah.
You know, with a new 3D thrilling thing where now you have the polarized glasses and everything. And I said, you know what? I'm so sick of this whole 3D thing, so I'm going to make my movie in 2D, which, of course, every movie is made in 2D. So, but you still get a pair of 3D-like glasses, but I'm promoting it that it was shot in 2D. So just to, you know, just to have fun with it, because that's what, you know, that's what it was all about. It was a movie that I made because I enjoyed it. I wanted to make a cheesy B-horror movie that people could have fun, you know, either laughing at, or maybe people that love that genre would really love it, or people that don't like that genre would just think it was, like, the worst movie they'd ever seen. You know, I made the movie to basically elicit reactions from people, and so far I have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, in the movie, for those that haven't seen it yet, you have a star and his agent and his brother-in-law try to kind of get away from it all and go on this charter boat with a female kick-butt captain that takes them on this adventure that they, you know, get something different than what they expected. How did you come up with this idea?
Well, initially, what was the big motivator, and if you get the DVD, I have it in the director's commentary, my co-producer and I thought it was based on another idea, but it wasn't. But I was sitting around one night, and I was thinking about the absurdity of corporate retreats. And they, at what became a big thing in the 90s and the early 2000s, was these big corporate retreats where all these high-powered executives, you know, men making hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars every year, would go out into nature. They'd strip down naked or, like, to their underwear and, like, beat on drums and howl at the moon and get back to their primal self. So I just that idea has just, I thought, was so ridiculous that I thought, well, you know, what if a bunch of, like, you know, girls, soccer moms, mothers, homemakers decided, you know what, that's what we're going to do, too. We're going to go out and get back to our primal selves in nature and but with different results. And I think it just gave away, like, the big spoiler of the film right there.
And I didn't expect the twist at the end at all. And that just made the whole movie for me, that twist.
Well,
I was like, it was great.
Well, that actually...
You just kind of gave it away.
Kind of, sort of. Let's hope people weren't paying that attention. But what ended up happening was is that actually kind of worked out for the best, because I built up that punchline at the end of the movie with...
Mm-hmm.
In my head, and that's, you know, everything else kind of builds up to that. And then I did an interview with Herschel Gordon Lewis, who actually lived down here. He lived in Palm Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And he said, and he told me in the interview, and then, you know, when we were chatting afterwards about movies and such, he goes, any good horror movie has to have a gotcha moment, where
mm-hmm.
you just reach out and you just startle the audience. And I said,
yeah.
I think I got it. So I think I got a gotcha moment.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was really good. And you had some really interesting locations in this film. Where did you shoot it?
Everything was shot locally in Florida. I am definitely a Florida filmmaker. I'm not planning on relocating to California. I'm not planning on relocating to New York or anything. I want to make movies down here. And most of what you saw there, the interiors were actually shot at a couple of local bar watering holes. Some
mm-hmm.
in Miami, some in Fort Lauderdale, and the actual island was shot on a 4-acre nature preserve in the middle of downtown Fort Lauderdale on the flight path of Fort Lauderdale National Airport,
really?
Which made some horrible things about trying to shoot outdoors.
Planes going over.
Yeah.
And you have great
basically...
plane footage yourself. You have that footage in the beginning of the plane. How did you do that?
Well, actually, I knew someone who knew someone that ran a flight school, and so I just convinced this guy to put a handy cam inside the window while one of his students was up taking his flight lesson. So they basically, when they took off, they put the handy cam in the window, they started the video, and he just left it there for the entire flight. It was like a 40-minute flight, and I just
mm-hmm.
edited down, you know, the footage I needed, and I was real happy with that. It turned out fantastic.
Yeah, it did.
It makes it look like a big budget movie.
It does. In fact, it's like Red Tails.
Yes.
Not quite, but, you know, it just kind of had that reminiscent feel a little bit to it. A little different, but you now that same plane was used when they get out of the plane. Is that the same plane?
No, it's actually a totally different Frank. Totally different Frank.
Okay. And then you had a boat, too. Where did you get the boat?
Actually, that was my co-producer, Derek Pixley, who was who was the producer. I was the executive producer. He was the producer. And he works with some people in his real job that actually own boats. And so what we did was we convinced them to let us use them for a couple of weekends.
Right.
Which, you know, this whole movie was made on such a small budget. And the reason was is that, you know, we found people that were excited about it and that believed in it and wanted to get involved. And, you know, they were just there helping us out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, you Florida is, I don't think it's quite there yet. I've only heard tales about California and how intermingled and interconnected in, like, New York where everyone is there for everyone else. And you're all, there's, like, a big bonding friendship and professional community there that all work together. And I think Florida's starting to get that, which is good. You know, people wanting to help out on each other's productions and you know, being there for other people that need their help.
Mm-hmm. And I think actually Florida's ahead of those other areas in that capacity, but
I've never been, yeah, I've never been to New York and L.A., so I'm only going from supposition.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very tight-knit, nice community down here. Everybody does help each other out, which is nice. How long did it take you to shoot the film, by the way?
Principal photography was actually over about, I guess, 8 weekends, but we only shot on weekends, 2 days a week, and
mm-hmm.
it was maybe 8 to 10 weekends, so maybe a total of about 16 shot days, and then we did a couple of additional days of pickup shots and a couple of scenes I really wasn't happy with. So that's probably 20 to 22 film days total.
Wow. Lengthy shoot. That's good.
It was. I mean, I have the mini DV tapes to prove how much footage I shot.
Yeah. And you had some really great special effects. That the blood, for instance, was very realistic to me. And I jumped several times during this movie. And
really?
I did. Especially when he goes in the closet in the boat and the thing falls on him, I jumped 2 feet in the air when that happened. And I did. And the blood squirting out, you know, I was like, I can't believe this is happening. You know, I didn't think that was going to happen. And, you know, when she's stabbing him, I was like, really? I didn't expect that at all. And, you know, the special effects with the organs and everything else, you know, how did you do that? Did you have a special person come in to do your makeup and special effects?
Oh Lord, no. This was done in the best B movie style. Literally, the scene that you're talking about with the organs, with the intestines coming out of the guy's stomach, was about 15 feet of sausage casing stuffed with oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
With
big
blood poured all over it, and one of my crew people shoving it up through the cavity of a mannequin with his bare hand. And actually, you can actually see his thumb if you look really hard.
That's great.
Yeah,
when they're eating, I was like gagging. I'm like, God. It reminded, actually, Flo, who plays the captain in this, worked on a movie with me where she played a zombie, and she did the same thing. She was eating intestines, and it was just as gross as when I saw her doing that. It grossed me out watching them eat that. Just grossed out by it. But Flo did a great job in this.
The final scene where all the cannibals are eating the person, that actually was lunch.
Mm-hmm.
They were just eating lunch.
Oh my God. What was that? Was it the same thing, the oatmeal?
No, it was actually hot dogs and pieces of chicken.
Oh God. Okay. You also had some great music. I know your composer was Michael Patterson, and how did you work with him? Did he watch the movie and then add the music to it, or did you kind of work with him ahead of time?
No, basically that's when it happened was when I put up my notices for the casting, he actually contacted me. He's out of L.A. And he expressed it. He said he loved, you know, those kind of movies. And I said, you know, I'd heard some of the stuff. He actually did some work on a CBS documentary on 9/11 that I'd heard years ago. I didn't know it was him at the time, though. And when he came on board, I was just thrilled beyond belief. And then I would hear the first samples of the stuff that he would make based on, you know, just the limited footage I would send him. And it was incredible. And, you know, that was having him attached to the project is such a coup. He did such a phenomenal job on the soundtrack. And literally what I did is I shot the whole film and sent it to him. And I said, listen, I've heard your stuff. Just go with it. Give me, you know, this is the mood we're trying to get. It's bad 60s, 70s B horror movie. Give me something, you know, to go with that. And he just kicked out a soundtrack that it was incredible. It really, you know, John Carpenter actually made me very, with the movies he's done, made me aware of how important a good musical soundtrack is to a horror film or any movie. And Michael hit a home run. I mean, you know, I don't have any problem saying that Michael's soundtrack is probably the most professional thing about the whole movie.
Yeah, it really was good music. Also, where did you find Allison Leonard? Is that how you pronounce her name?
Allison Leonard. She's actually
Leonard.
She actually is the wife of a friend.
Okay,
she's a friend. Oh yeah, she's great. She really got into it. She's a professional dancer. She works with a dance troupe down here in Miami, the Braz Dance Theater, and she also is a graduate of FIU in therapeutic dance. So she has a degree in therapeutic dance.
When she was doing those crazy crab walk thing that she was doing, it was so bizarre, and it so fit what you were trying to get across. But she managed to stay gorgeous throughout the entire movie. It was amazing.
It's interpretive dance. She just went with it. She put together something in her head, and I know what needs to get done on the set when I'm shooting a film, but I really like having the input of the people that I work with. I'm not like the tyrant director that says no, do it this way. When people give good input, I love it. And she actually helped choreograph the girls in their little dance number they did too.
So,
she's very talented.
Yeah. And you had Russ Shucks Jones do your fight choreography. How long did it take you to do some of those fight scenes, like with Flo and everything?
About 10 minutes.
Okay, wow. Great.
Russ came in. I mean, that was the final reshoot we did for the movie, and it actually was, as cheesy as the scenes in the bar were, they were actually better than the original scenes I shot. I was just so unhappy with the footage I'd gotten from the original bar scenes. I literally reshot it twice in two different locations. There were actually a total of four bars. The bar that you see in the movie where all of them are having a conversation later on is a totally different bar than the one that you see the fight scene in.
Okay.
He came in, he wanted to be part of the production. You know, he Flo said, I've got a friend. And this is how I met him, too, and he's a really great guy. Very talented voiceover actor who has his own radio show up in Palm Beach. And he's also making a short film now called Deadly Flower, which looks great from what I've seen so far. And
Flo
introduced me. Yeah, Flo introduced me to him, and he came down, and we got to meet and became friendly. And he's like, yeah, I can do something like this. And, you know, he helped coach them all through the fight scenes at the end of the movie. And in that bar scene, I'm like, hey, you know, man, you get a credit as a fight choreographer. So I was actually afraid to do some. I was afraid to do some of the things with them that he did. Because I was like, I don't want to, you know, I don't need this. I don't need, you know, to break someone's leg by accident because I don't know enough about fight choreography. But he was awesome.
Yeah, great. What do you think was the most challenging part of the movie overall?
Mostly just trying to get, you know, the things done with virtually no money. Money solves lots of problems. And when you don't have it, you have to think of more creative ways of solving them. So
that makes it better sometimes.
Yeah, so just doing things on a tight budget was really the biggest challenge.
If you had to do it again, you know, besides the money factor, would there be anything that you would do differently?
Yeah, I definitely would. I would have picked up the pacing. You know, even though I intentionally, you know, I one of the things that I captured, and actually the first review we got about Island was a review by a horror site. And the reviewer there really caught what I was trying to do. When you have this standard old 50s sci-fi movies, and I did this on purpose in Island, you had generally something happen right in the beginning, and then you would have like 20, 25 minutes of just like dialogue and build-up. You know, no action, nothing exciting happens. And that's like every 50s sci-fi movie. I mean, watch The Thing from Another World. It's a great example. You know, something happens in the beginning, and then all of a sudden nothing happens for like 25 minutes. And I intentionally did that. But what I would see, that makes it a little more difficult for more modern viewing audiences to watch. So I would have had the girls in more in the movie, I would have had more blood, more gore. If I had, you know, the time and the money to do it, I would have definitely thrown things out like that, too, to really try to spice it up a little bit for the more modern viewing audience who really wants to see the gore and the blood and the naked girls running around and things like that. That's really where it would come down to. I would have done that.
Okay. And you kind of came up with a interesting approach to market the film as far as, you know, how you can see it through Distrify. How did you get the film on that site? And basically people can rent it or buy it. How does that work?
Well, with Distrify, what it is, the company that actually one of my actors, Bo Yadi, found online what he was talking about. And so I checked him out and I said, you know, I was looking for a way. I really went through Amazon, and Amazon's problem is that when you sell your movie, and Amazon does digital download, and they do rent to own and things. When they do the downloads, it's only available in the United States. Okay, you can't download from anywhere else in the world. You can't download from Canada. You can't download from Mexico. It's United States only. So I said, okay. I want something that is worldwide. So he found this website, and I went online. I found out about them, and I said, well, they basically what they do is you install their player on your whatever website, whatever blog. I mean, you know, if you have a blog, you can install the player on your blog. Mm-hmm. Actually, you can play the movie right off Facebook, too. It allows you to install it on Facebook. And it's an application that allows you to download, you know, you go through it, either use a credit card, you can use PayPal, whatever, and you download or view the movie right on your computer, or you can use your computer to download it on your TV. And it's worldwide. So anyone in the world can go through PayPal and say, hey, here's my $3. I'm downloading it and watching it anywhere I want. And you know, when you have something new like that, you're always worried that there might be something, you know, kind of catch, or is there, you know, is this all in the up and up? And then, of course, if you go there, you find out that Terry Gilliam, who a former member of Monty Python, you know, director of The Fisher King and Leaving Las Vegas and, you know, 12 Monkeys, you know, an accomplished auteur film director, he just sold his newest film through them. So the only way to get his new short film is to go through Distrify. So he's got a brand new film. And I'm like, geez, if it's good enough for Terry Gilliam, definitely good enough for me. So, so I looked it up that way.
Why don't you give out that website so people have it, your website?
Well, it's Distrify, which is Distrify.com. And then, of course, you know, if they want to rent or download the movie, they can go right through the Cannibal Death Gods website, which is CannibalDeathGods.com. And the other beautiful thing about Distrify is that people want to help promote the movie, they can actually make money doing it. Because what happens is if you put the player on your website or your blog and you click it's called an aggregate program, you actually get a percentage of every sale. So anytime someone downloads it from you, you get money. So
I'm already on it.
Cool.
Already there.
So, it's a great idea that they're doing, you know. And I've had this conversation with probably a dozen filmmakers in the last month or so because I've been trying to get out and network more and spread the word. The traditional distribution system in Hollywood, that is great if you happen to be doing movies for studios or have big budgets. You'll get out, you get in the movie theaters, you'll get in the big festivals like Sundance, and you get in the big festivals like Cannes and everything. But for the independent filmmaker that doesn't have millions of dollars to spend on their movie, I think the internet is the way it's going to go. You're going to go through Netflix, you're going to go through digital downloads, you're going to go through the direct streaming and everything to get your movies out there. Now, of course, it's up to the filmmaker to try to sell it, you know, much in the way that Roger Corman tried to sell movies to the theaters back in his day. You know, he'd go out and just pound the pavement and get, you know, the local distributors to pick it up and show his films. But, you know, in this world, digital world, everything is a little more difficult to get noticed. But, you know, if you're operating with a $10,000 budget on your film or a $20,000 budget on your film or even $100,000, you know, unless you end up being the new Paranormal Activity, most of the studios and distributors are going to ignore you. You know?
Right.
So I think this is the way it's going to go. It's going to be a lot of direct distribution over the internet.
Okay. Well, we're running out of time.
Okay.
But thanks, Jeff, for being on today, and hopefully people will go check out your movie. Again, go to CannibalDeathGods.com and find out what it's all about and get some B-movie goodness.
Thanks for having
me
on.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for talking with us. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, guys, so we had a brief chat there with Jeff Freeman, director of the Island of Cannibal Death Gods. And if you missed any part of this broadcast, of course, you can go back and listen to the archive and listen to it in its entirety. Also, like I said, I have other archives of different filmmakers that I've interviewed over many, many weeks that you can go back and listen to. In addition, I have another show called Basics of the Biz, which is on Thursday mornings at 1 o'clock in the morning, where I talk about the film industry from my perspective as an actor specifically. And that show, you can call in and ask me questions about the business if you're interested in becoming an actor. But I usually have this show, the Indie Streak show, on Sundays at 1 o'clock. You'll notice that today it was at 1:30. We had a little bit of a glitch, but I hope next week again it will be on at 1 o'clock once more. And you want to just tune in. Keep checking back to this Blog Talk Radio site / Indie Streak to find out what I have coming up next. Sometimes I don't announce it until, let's say, Friday, what's coming up for Sunday. But you never know who I'll be interviewing next, okay? Also, today, there's a special event going on. If you're listening to this live, it's still going on for about an hour. It's called Actors Walk, and you can find out about it at actorswalk.org, O-R-G. Unfortunately, I can't be there right now because I'm here with you, but if you go out there, they have all kinds of activities going on, and the proceeds benefit this organization, actorswalk.org, is where, again, where you can find out the information, and it helps abused children. So it's a very important cause. A friend of mine started it after the death of his daughter, and I'm not going to get into all the details of it, but you can find out, once again, more about it at actorswalk.org. And if you missed the event today, I'm sure they're going to be taking donations after this. It's a very important cause to find out about. Okay, also, check out my website, which is independentstreak.ning.com. Again, independentstreak, S-T-R-E-A-K, .ning, N-I-N-G.com. I have a lot of different things posted up there, and I'm going to be updating it probably shortly with some new information. There's all kinds of events coming up. There's always events coming up, and sometimes I don't have everything posted, but I try to put up as much as I can. And there's a lot of Oscar parties next weekend. There's one in Fort Lauderdale down at Cinema Paradiso. You can find out directly more about that at fliff.com, F-L-I-F-F.com. There's also one in association with the Palm Beach International Film Festival at Meisner Park in Boca Raton, Florida. So you can find out about that as well by going to the Palm Beach International Film Festival site. I'm sure they have some information about that there. There's a lot of local actors that will be attending one of those two events. I will not be, because it's my birthday on Sunday the 26th, so I probably will not be at one of those two events, but I hope you guys go to it and have fun and mingle, because that's what it's all about, network with other filmmakers, because you never know what project you will be working on next. Like Jeff Freeman said, this area is really a hotbed of activity. There's a lot of things going on. There's a lot of people that are collaborating on each other's projects, and that's really what it's all about, folks, is getting out there and cooperating with each other. But this show is over for today, but I do hope that you will tune in next Sunday, same bat channel, same bat time, at, well, it'll be 1 o'clock instead of 1:30. But I'm going to go now because I'm rambling on. So I thank you for listening in, and I will talk to you then. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.